Good morning, MGTOW men. Oh. A device of Satan. I was sort of like lying in bed, because I tend to sleep for 2 hours and then get up again. Risk of being labelled a rather plump sex symbol. No, cat. Leave me alone. Oh, my darling little downy. Peanut is at the door going, let me in, let me in. I must be in. Oh, sweetheart, no. Sorry, mate. Oh, but I've gotten the, you know how you get, like, where you lean up against the wall in the shower and, you know, you get all the sort of, like, body oils and grime and shit like that, making sort of marks on the wall. Well, I found most of the household sort of cleaners, you know, they have all these sort of exotic chemicals in them, but they don't really fucking clean really well, and they only work well on glass or ceramic tiles, you know. As far as melamine surfaces and that go, they sort of fairly suck, you know. And so what I did is I got my own pressure spray bottle that holds about 2 litres. And I made up a mixture of probably about 50 or 60 grams of 50 or 60 grams of sodium hydroxide and about 20 or 30 millilitres of dishwashing liquid. And what happens is you get a mixture of the basis of most, not all. Chemistry is a fucking mind-blowing subject. You know, if you want to do, you know, it's like that enemy of the living people, Timothy Leary. You know, better live, or Dow Chemicals, better living through chemistry. Well, I essentially regard one of my friends many years ago was the late, great Dr. Charles Slack. And he was with Timothy Leary producing LSD at UCLA. I think that stands for University of California, Los Angeles or something. UCLA. And that, you can find him in Wikipedia, you know, a reference to him. That he and Timothy Leary were doing all these drugs, and dear old Charles Slack, over the years, ended up rather drug fucked, you know. And, so we met in Narcotics Anonymous, and he did some things for me that were remarkably good. He taught me some things about women. He said, you know, play hard to get, you know. Because a woman who is really interested in you as a person will put in the time and the effort and the energy to develop a relationship with you, whereas a woman who's just sniffing around for a fuck, she doesn't get it in the first 5 minutes. She'll piss off. She'll head off and go chase someone else, you know. And I found that to be like an extraordinarily helpful bit of advice, you know. But that also, in a general sense, that's, you know, because if they're not investing time, effort and, oh God, overflow. If they're not investing time, effort and energy into the actual relationship, they're not worth anything, you know. So Yeah. So I was going to mount the camera up higher, but then you'd be able to see a bit more of it than what I wanted. And I thought, you know, that is something I feel a bit embarrassed about and ashamed of, because I look at me and I'm thinking, you don't have a great set of man tits because you're just naturally gorgeous. You're just naturally gorgeous and fucking obese. You need to lose weight. No, you need to gain health, you know? And that's the thing about making excuses. You can say, oh, fucking health conditions, this, that, and the other, but that's like the escape clause. That's the back door, you know? That's the fucking bullshit. What's really necessary is to look at what opportunities there are for increasing my health. Sure, you know, broken back and a few other bits and pieces, I can't go on a 5K jog or a 5K run, but I can ride my bicycle. If it's not real windy and not real cold, I can ride my bicycle for, say, 5Ks and then walk back one and a half k's maybe, you know, with lots of little pauses, you know. So there are opportunities for improvement. I just need to take them, make the most of them, you know. So back to the art of chemistry and soap. That's why it's sort of, I think it's, scratching the taint. Taint my nut circ and taint my asshole. Yeah, so I feel a bit ashamed of having these set of man tits and a big belly, you know. There's opportunities for improvement, then do something about it, you know. Don't fucking. So that's better. No more back doors. Yeah, I guess I'm just having a bit of a wash. I'll just turn away for a second. No peeping. Oh, it's a cold night. Outside it's something like, you know, 3 or 4 degrees C, so the bathroom isn't much warmer, so it'll soak up. The bath itself is kind of heavy cast iron, and it'll soak up a fair bit of heat. There's a need to actually run a bath and let all the cast iron and everything soak up the heat. And then the bath water will get a little bit colder. And then with a bit of evaporation and whatnot, the bath will get colder still, you know, or the, not so much evaporation of moisture, but the evaporation of temperature by, thermal fucking, what is it called? Convection, yeah. Back to the issue of soap and cleaning the bathroom. So one of the things is, when you're dealing with caustic soda, avoid contact with all metals, you know, metal, things that contain iron, stainless steel, all that sort of stuff, because sodium hydroxide is a mineral salt. It's also a very aggressive alkali, and it makes stainless steel all shiny and new by stripping off all the oxide, I think it is, and leaving nice clean bare metal to be re-oxidised and thus keep up the sort of protection. So, or the cathodic or cathodic protection of itself by the oxide and by the chromium oxide film. And yeah, so anyway, what I did is I made up a two litre solution of about 50 or 60 grams of sodium hydroxide. You get nearly 2 litres of water, 50, 60 grams of sodium hydroxide, and about 30 or 40 mil of dishwashing liquid, because that's how I got into this fucking discussion. The most soaps, and this is how I got lost again, are composed of like an alkali based with some sort of oil, and you sort of destroy most of the destructive effects of the alkali with the oil, but you only all fat, and you only leave just enough, slightly higher amounts of alkali in the mix to actually still be to a degree somewhat active against the dirt and the oil and the grease and shit on your skin, you know. It's sort of like it's taking it down from say 100% like really super aggressive alkali to a very mild amount and effective saponification, which is to emulsify fat, oil, and not so much dirt, but the dirt contained on things in the oil with water, and that's the magic. And so if you ever study chemistry, there's just fucking extraordinary amounts of and types and varieties of just soap. You know, it's just like, fuck me, you know. And I once had a school teacher whose nickname was Bubbles, and because he was an industrial chemist in a fucking soap factory, you know, in detergents and stuff, you know. So I won't go into this, but it's absolutely extraordinary, you know. It's a lot of things are just finely balanced ratios of detergent and fragrance and colour, and you find that just because they do the mixture just so, it'll retain its fragrance, it'll retain its efficacy, which is a variety of the word efficient. Efficacy, that's it. And it's potency, and it's cleaning bits and pieces. And the soap itself won't destroy the fragrance, which is usually oil based or alcohol based or whatever, you know, it won't destroy that. And yeah, and it won't destroy the bloody pigment to give it those lovely little coloured tints. And one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight was that there's been a couple of times in my life where I'll do the side profile. I've met young women and they've got like a fucking knuckle nose. I hope this shows up, but they've got a nose that goes like that, you know. It's a short nose and it goes straight down, you know. And, yeah. like that. And I've just immediately become aroused and very, very, very interested in fucking them. And what I worked out, it was just like, fuck, bang. I see it and it's just like, bang. And it's like, I don't sort of normally feel that way around most women, you know what I mean? I don't have much, unless it's a pure animal sort of fuck, I really don't care much for most women, you know. But the, what I've sort of found is that over the years, I've come to sort of see that, the last few days, few weeks, I've come to think of, like, in terms of my old ex, you know, she was sort of, hadn't looked after herself that well. So by the time she was 28, she was, like, in fairly sort of poor shape, you know. And I was, like, no, I was about 22, 23, and she was, like, about 38. And, you know, she'd got a lot of miles on her from drinking, you know, and other issues, and not taking good care of herself. And there were things about her that I genuinely liked and that I've been immensely grateful for, but it was one of those things that had to come, and that relationship had to go, you know. And but what I've sort of determined in the last few weeks, I've thought, well, you know, you can stop sort of maintaining that continuum of a sort of, I guess, attachment or spiritual attachment or a memory or something. I can move on from that relationship. And because when I want to fuck someone, I want them to be someone who I like and who I find to be attractive. You know, I don't want to be looking at their face while I'm fucking them and thinking this is a good deal. And this is what I call the sort of like the fourth state of attraction, or the primary sort of attraction, which is genetic attraction. You know, I want to have a partner that is good look. There's certain sorts of things. It's like, say, if these are the keys in my fucking head, these are the genetic sort of selection sort of fucking things, and these are her, what's on her fucking, you know, oh, how do I do that? And so when we meet, it's just like clunk. It's an immediate interlock that where I'm looking at her and I'm, see, when you look at someone's face, there's one sort of DNA sort of person, surgeon, birth sort of person, said is when you look at someone's face, it tells you several things. And one of the things is that if their eyes and their, you know, everything's, you know, if you draw a centre line across the nose and the eyes and the forehead, you know what I mean, and mouth, and everything lines up to a particular sort of set of proportions, it tells you that in one sense that they are at least genetically healthy enough to have made it through the birth process, you know. And this is why women are really concerned about their looks, because they get psychologically sort of screened out if they look like they're genetically sort of defective in any sort of significant way, you know. And, you know, and, oh, God, bath time. Bath's a really good place to talk. I was looking at the garden hose. Now, what the fuck are you doing with a firefighting hose in your bathroom? Well, that, dear viewer, is another story for another day. No, it's actually because I'm quite... Fires do break out, and sometimes it can be sort of from the most obscure of sources from defective power cords or equipment or something like that, and that can set a place on fire. And if you can get to that, you know, the smoke alarm will send off a signal, you know, and as soon as you sort of wake up and see that, you can, if you can hop onto that fire straight away, you can bring it under control and put it out straight away, you know. But by the time most fires get sort of going, within 5 minutes, the place is like an inferno, and in 10 minutes, the house is burned to the fucking burning to the ground, you know. It's fucked, it's gone. So by having fire fighting equipment in situ, it greatly increases your chances of, you know, putting the fire out rather than sitting there going, oh, my God, my house is on fire. Oh, run for your life, you know. Like, fuck off, you know. And yeah, about that sort of genetic lock. I've seen two young, healthy, biologically, you know, where that sort of, where that key of attraction, like my genes are going, she's what you want. She is what we want to breed with because she's going to produce good, strong, healthy children and lots of them, you know. That's it. So, you know, there may be sort of romantic feelings. There may be, oh God, there may be sort of romantic feelings. There may be general attractiveness, but there's the fourth, or what I call the sort of primary type of attraction, where you just go, fuck, this is not romantic sort of stuff. This is, you know, this is success, this is genetic, this is successful breeding, you know, where you just want to throw yourself at them and fuck their brains out, you know, and get them pregnant and have heaps of children, you know. And that's what I've sort of worked out. And, yeah, so that's... that's... yeah, so there you go. So I've made my own household cleaner, which just, you know, dissolves all the fucking grime. And it's to be sparingly applied on any surface that's not enameled or porcelain or glass or something. You know, but one of the things about it is that you don't get, there's a lot of modern bleachers that have like 10 grams a litre of sodium hydroxide in them, and they're very good, but they also contain sodium hypochlorite, which is chlorine, and that's, you know, like an oxygen, I think chlorine is either an element or it's a compound of oxygen. You know, because I forget, I don't do a lot of chemistry and I'm not a super genius at it, you know what I mean? I think chlorine might be an element, but when it combines with, you know, that's where you get compounds like sodium chloride, which sodium's a very aggressive, fucking chemically a very aggressive metal, and chlorine is a very reactive element in its own right. And when the two meet, it's like nearly hydrogen bomb type reactions. But then you get the most stable and one of the, I wouldn't go eating, you know, vast quantities of table salt, you know. But sodium chloride is one of the most, it's not, you know, I'm speaking in general sort of terms, but ordinary sea salt or table salt is probably one of the most sort of safest and non-toxic sort of compounds that you can get, you know, like you don't eat tons of it, you know, they go, oh, I think I'll have a tablespoon of salt to eat for breakfast. Yeah, so, but I'm sort of speaking in terms of the sort of the resultant product. Sodium chloride is safe-ish and stable, you know, and relatively non-reactive, you know, compared to what its two base elements are, you know. But combined with water, it also makes a very, very good conductor. Because a lot of people don't know this, but pure water, pure H2O, does not conduct electricity. It's the the conductivity of the water is based upon how many dissolved, how much dissolved salts there are in the water and the types of salts, which leads to anions and cations, which are, you know, electrical sort of compounds and elements. So yeah, but that's how you make up water resistors. Like, water will absorb a lot of fucking heat energy. It's cheap and it's easy to sort of transport and make up, you know, huge resistors that make up, you know, that can absorb a lot of fucking power, you know. Well, you know, if you've got like a little resistor like that, you know, say something that long and about that wide, you know, like a half watt resistor or something from a radio or something. Well, you know, you can make up water resistors that contain, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 litres. And they're sort of, comparatively speaking, they're as cheap as fuck to make, you know. They're essentially water troughs, you know, usually. And by controlling the amount of dissolved salt in the water determines their resistance. So if you only put a teaspoon of salt into a huge, big, long trough of water, it'll have a very, 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 very high resistance. Whereas as if it's salty or saltier than seawater, it has a very low resistance. It's very conductive. And so when they have very, very high voltage and very, very high energy circuits or equipment that they want to depower, you know, they can just dump the fucking, these are things like, you know, cyclotrons and bloody particle accelerators and stuff, you know, like they're, you know, using, say, 300,000 volts or something, and they're just enormous amounts of fucking power, you know. And they just want to drain all the fucking components of all the electricity. They use water resistors because it's the only sort of commercially sort of feasible way to dump all that energy. You know, it'll absorb a lot of energy in terms of heat. And, you know. So, yeah. So water resistors are really good. But that was the thing with the caustic soda, or sodium hydroxide, as a cleaning solution, that if you set that up, like people go, oh, stainless steel, how wonderful. Oh, look at that, you know. But if you go back before chromium was really sort of being mined and added to alloys for all sorts of different ideas and, you know, engine valves and other bits and pieces, stainless steel didn't exist really. So that's like, I think, iron, nickel and chromium, I think, are the three main elements in it. And the only thing about stainless steel is when you've used carbon steel knives, they're really good, but when you use acidic type compounds on them, you know, use them to cut, say, tomatoes or some other sorts of things, you know, where there's a high amount of acid, the acid will actually etch the surface and cause rusting. That'll cause staining of the knife. And so what the main claim for stainless steel is they're called, it is stain less, you know what I mean? It will stain less. It will not show any overt signs of corrosion and rusting, you know. But if you get stainless steel and if you put it in an oxygen-deprived environment like water that has a little bit of organic matter, so the organic matter biologically digests, you got to remember that there's bacteria that will, you know, survive quite well in really strong caustic soda solutions, you know, and they will cause a decomposition of the solution into different sort of compounds. And so when you get, say, all your nice stainless steel bowls and cutlery and stuff like that and stick it in a plastic tub, put the lid on, and it's got food and shit in there, you know, and just grime and stuff, and then forget about it and go to pull your stuff out for 3 years. Well, the organic matter has consumed all the free oxygen in the water, and because there's no oxygen in there to replace the oxygen that's being pulled off the surface of the stainless steel, that will allow the conductive solution, being caustic soda and water, and an absence, you know, like carbides of some description, to actually cause a reaction between the iron and the other elements in the stainless steel, and you can just rot fucking holes in stainless steel very easily. I mean, I'm talking about spoons that have holes through them, you know, knives where the half the blade's disappeared, you know, kitchen knives. So it's stainless steel under a certain range of conditions is a really good alloys. But if you deviate from those conditions, they rust like fuck, you know. And if you're welding or grinding or anything like that, you have to use stainless steel compatible products like wire brushes and stainless steel wire brushes on stainless steel. And you have to use other equipment that's made for stainless steel, because if you get stainless steel and iron, like as in like common iron type alloys, grinding and embedding into the surface of the stainless steel, then that little particle of fucking plain iron off the grinding wheel will actually set up an electrolytic cell. So the carbon steel will rust, and then that'll set off a chain reaction throughout the stainless steel, you know. So cross-contamination for people who are welding and processing stainless steel, you know, you've either working with stainless steel or you're working with other things. You're not working with stainless steel in the grime and shit and dust and stuff of other, from other fucking materials, you know. You can't mix them up. And, fascinating stuff. So there you go. That's with the sodium hydroxide cleaning solution. Best to wear gloves. Best to wear a face shield, or at the very least, goggles to stop, you know, any spray, you know, bouncing off things and coming back into your eyes, you know. Very hazardous. Because one of the things about caustic soda is that It chemically decouples proteins. That's why when you get caustic soda type solutions on your fingers, they feel really slimy, and that's because the protein is simply decoupling. It's falling apart, you know. And it's like, say, if the protein in your skin is made of, say, chain, you know, say ordinary, you know, galvanized iron fucking chain links, you know, that you put to close gates or some shit, you know. But say if one in every, say, if you had, say, a meter of, or 1 yard or 3 feet or whatever of chain, but one in every, say, five links was made of, say, paper, you know, well, what the caustic soda is it's like water on the paper, you know. So every five links, when the paper links get wet, the chain just turns into sort of syrup, so to speak. That's why it's so dangerous to get caustic soda in your eyes. It literally just dissolves the fucking eyeball from the surface layer in, you know. And, you know, it does it to your skin, but if you get it in your eyes, fucking watch out, pal, you know. Very bad. So face shield, depends on how strong the solution is and how much of it you're spraying around and how carefully you're spraying it, but good fully sort of enclosed sort of goggles, you know, the full ones that fit around your face. And if you're only doing a little bit of stuff, you know, and it's sort of downwind and down fucking hill or whatever, you know, that's okay. But, you know, anything beyond that, you use a face shield and the goggles. That's nasty. But anyway, that's how I got rid of the soap sort of, I don't know why they call it soap scum, because it's generally not soap. It's just oil and dirt and shit from our skins gradually rubbing off onto the fucking surfaces around the shower and then, you know, going, you know, just building up over time. So, but by calling it soap scum instead of just body grime, it, you know, it sort of depersonifies our own filth, you know. So that's something to consider, you know. That's I was sort of taking a bit of umbrage, and with what happens is over time the medical people try to make everything sort of, it's like a bit like George Kalin, you know, where he was saying things along the lines, they sort of keep sweetening up sort of different aspects and ideas, you know what I mean? They won't say what it is, they use euphemisms, you know. And so many years ago, the word for, say, someone who was retarded was not to call them retarded or intellectually incapacitated or limited in function. It's not, you know, say, oh, we can't say that, that's very nasty. Oh, so then they called them a moron, you know, which is means the same thing. And then moron became a nasty sort of slur word, you know, you fucking moron, you know, rather than a sort of a genuine sort of medical type word. So they changed it. This is not the correct sequence, but then they changed it to idiot, you know what I mean, which means it's sort of French and it means someone of diminished capacity. So, you know, and that's why they mean like, they use words like idiot savant, which is, I think savant means, is French for servant, but, or it could be sort of like, I don't think it is, but I think it could be sort of like a interstellar sort of level, illuminated sort of person who's both an idiot and in some ways is like a super genius, you know. You know. So like, you know, they're completely fucked for whatever else in life that goes on, they're completely fucked. but for a very narrow range of sort of things. They're just absolutely extraordinary, you know. So you get words like moron, idiot, you know, things like that. And they used to call manic depressive. They think, oh, manic mania, you know, a crazy person, you know, werewolf or whatever, you know, full moon werewolf, whatever, you know. And then you get, oh, what's it, words? The idiot, yeah, the manic depressive. So then they changed it to bipolar, you know. They're always trying to sort of change things so it's always nicer, rather than sticking to like a fact-based meaning and sticking to their fucking guns. Always sort of changing they're always changing the finishing line, or always moving the goalposts, always changing the fucking, you know, from one thing into another by euphemisms and nicer words and all this sort of stuff, you know. And, you know, the sort of the medical community seems to be sort of far less than immune to changes in dogmatic sort of expressions and terms, you know. They seem to be sort of, oh my God, no, you know. Idiot is a genuine sort of term for someone who's of diminished capacity, you know. Not in their own right, but relative, you know, in a measurement against of cognitive sort of functions, you know, against the average sort of person. You know, they're sort of greatly diminished in respect to the average, you know. Yeah, so these are all things to consider. So, yeah, with the caustic soda, it's pretty easy to make up your own really, really, really good cleaning solution. You know, the soap acts as a saponifier. You know, the detergent acts as a saponifier to help the caustic soda solution spread and stick to all the surfaces. And the caustic soda is the savage sort of ingredient. And the detergent acts as a complementary emulsifier, you know. So the caustic soda, turns any fats, oils and grease into fucking, as saponifies it, but, you know, the two sort of complement each other. And, oh, there was a word. Ah, oh, fuck. I'm trying to think of this word. As if, well, like when they get sort of certain sort of insecticides, if they use one compound, it's not particularly poisonous, but when they add another compound to it, it's not reactive or, what is it? It's like an accelerant in a fire. It's in that term of word usage. If you get, say, oh, what is the words? Synergistic, that's the word I think it is. So if you get one compound, it's not particularly poisonous, it's not particularly bad or whatever, but, and you add it to another compound that is poisonous, but we'll say it's level, say, 3 out of 10 in terms of toxicity, but because the two compounds work together in ways that are sort of their own peculiarification, yeah, I know what I mean. Because of their own peculiarification or something, and because of their own combined effects, one will act as a synergistic effect on the other compound. So it's like when that poison gets into the fucking insect through the pores in its skin, the poison does the poisoning, but I'm just making this up, sort of, you know, but the other poison, but the other compound, the synergesis, which is the process, that actually accelerates the insect's metabolism. One might be the poison and the other one might accelerate the insect's metabolism, so that little bit of poison will spread really fast through the fucking body of the insect and it falls down like dead sort of within sort of, or it becomes incapacitated within sort of seconds, you know, within say 20 or 30 seconds it's fucking down and the fly is buzzing around on the floorboards or whatever, you know what I mean? Whereas if they took the fucking poison alone, it might be buzzing around for 5 or 10 minutes and taking 10 minutes to die, you know. Buzzing around for the next 3 to 5 minutes and then landing on the floorboards and going bzz, 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 you know. So that's what they use. That's the active process of synergesis. That's where one compound or one element or compound or whatever really greatly accelerates the fucking, greatly sort of enhances the capacity of the other product. And I don't know, over the years, the poisons for insects have greatly changed so that this is, you know, instead of being just a big dose of something really lethal, they now use only sort of moderately poison compounds, but with synergistic materials added to them. They, you notice with the fly sprays, they say fast knockdown times, you know, rather than the poison, really strong poison getting into the body and then slowly spreading throughout the body and knocking the bloody, you know, the impulses, you know, the electrical impulses in the nerve system, or, you know, fucking ruining its heart or some other sort of shit. You get all this, you get these rapidly enhanced sort of effects from one compound accelerating, enhancing and accelerating the effects of another compound. So this is what this, when you make up your own caustic soda solutions of say about 50 grams of sodium hydroxide, you know, say 30 to 50 grams of sodium hydroxide per 2 litres of water, and about, you know, 30 mil or so of dishwashing liquid, you know, in with the caustic soda, well, that's the synergistic sort of compound that greatly affects the wetting ability of the caustic soda, and it also greatly increases the effectiveness or the stay-on time of the caustic soda. So, yeah, that's today's lessons in life and genetics. I need some pussy. Bye.